This is the Well-Being Report on WDIY, discussing the vital conditions for health and well-being in the Lehigh Valley. Featuring WDIY's Margaret McConnell and Dr. Samantha Schock, Executive Director at the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. Now, here's Margaret and Samantha.
Hello and welcome back to the Well-Being Report of WDIY. I'm your co-host, Margaret McConnell, the Executive Director at WDIY, and I'm pleased to say that this program is supported by the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. And with me today, as always, is my co-host, Samantha Schock, who is the Executive Director at the Institute. Hello.
Hey, Margaret. Excited to be back for another year.
Yeah, so we're delving deeper into these vital conditions for health and well-being, which has been the real focus of the show in 2025. And last episode, to round out the year, we got into the heart of the vital conditions, right? So this belonging and civic muscle. And we had with us Dr. Bobby Milstein from the Ripple Foundation. And he sort of shared large picture, right? And bigger things that are happening, not bigger things, but things that are happening that have happened across the country.
Yep, in places like Delaware and Palm Beach, and how people are really investing in this idea of sense of belonging and civic muscle as they're thinking about vital conditions work within their communities.
And he introduced or reintroduced the word steward and stewardship, which is, you know, everybody has a way that they can contribute to making something happen. We can all be responsible in some way, shape, or form for carrying out action. So we're pleased to welcome back Bobby Milstein from Ripple. Thanks for being here.
Yes, a pleasure. This is such an important conversation.
And I'll just give a quick bio. Bobby is a national leader in system strategy and shared stewardship. He directs system strategy for Rethink Health at the Ripple Foundation. And his work has shaped how organizations like Leonard Parker Poole and Lehigh Valley Health Network imagine community health. So thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit where we left off, Sam.
Sure, yeah. So last episode, we were able to cover what is sense of belonging and civic muscle and why is it at the center of the circle? So in the well-being portfolio that we keep referring to, this wheel that has different pieces of the pie, and in the center of that really is sense of belonging and civic muscle. And the idea is that it's really an amplification of the individual impact that we can have around housing, education, meaningful work, and wealth. And that if we don't feel connected to each other and to place and to something, you know, that we're contributing to something bigger, we're not going to be able to see the full effects at a systems level on some of these other areas that we know that we're trying to address. And we talked a little bit about how we've started to do that locally and recognizing that what we often hear as individuals working within big systems is that the community doesn't trust the system, whether that's the healthcare system, the school district, local government, you know, pick the big system. And it's because that sometimes it feels disjointed or disconnected and that, you know, we don't understand how people's day-to-day lives work within their neighborhood or the place that they're living. And as we started to think about neighborhood development, that really came through as the first thing we knew we needed to start to work on. How do we have a different relationship with the community that we're trying to serve and work with? In order to do that, it means that we have to sort of overinvest in that area because it is the part that is often least tended to and that people most look for or are wanting to, you know, have in place. And so we just started to kind of cover, you know, what that looks like. What is this concept of sense of belonging and civic muscle? How do other places across the country, you know, are they also thinking about investing this? And then what does that mean locally? And so we'll sort of pick up there and talk a little bit about how do we position sense of belonging and civic muscle and how are we all stewards in that? And I want to start with a concept of sort of the zero-sum game, Bobby. You know, often when we're doing work within communities, you'll hear community-based organizations are, you know, fighting for the same bucket of resources. And so there's this competition or need to undercut one another as we're trying to serve the same community at the end of the day. Or now people talk about scarcity mindset versus an abundance mindset. And how do we not just look at what we don't have, but really investing in the things that we do have and recognizing that we often have most of what we need to make things happen. And, you know, one of the concepts that was shared with us along the way by some of our colleagues was the infinite game from Simon Sinek, and thinking about it is really, if we're working towards a larger cause, it means that we have to put ourselves in the context of how are we contributing to that thing. It's not just about us and what our organization or our group is doing, but how does that fit in with everything else? And if we can do that and recognize that it's not just on our shoulders, it's not ours to own, it's actually the community that we're doing this for, that it shifts the sort of focus of it's not about me winning, it's about all of us winning. So talk to me a little bit about how that fits into this idea of sense of belonging and civic muscle, and how you're seeing that mindset shift happen as people invest in sense of belonging and civic muscle.
Yeah, I'm so glad you put this in the context of an infinite game, because so much of our sort of routine mindset around how do we invest and what work do we do is about achieving some success, some win on an issue that matters immediately to, you know, to us as individuals or as an organization. But there's something bigger to the story, right? Yes, there's always the kind of tyranny of the short-term view and what are we doing on Monday that's going to make that's important to me and my organization. And even if that's a great win, is that the whole story, right? Is there a bigger context in which all of our contributions are adding up to something different? And this is, you know, you mentioned the idea of thinking about systems. Systems are sometimes everywhere, but we still don't see them, and we don't necessarily study how they work. And, you know, I spent a big part of my career and my education learning things about systems as a science, but it's also a very human practice of how do we think of ourselves as like we're parts of a bigger whole, but there's also a greater whole that sometimes it's even simpler when you really step back and think about what this work is about and what we value. It's not just what I'm doing in my organization that I would declare a win, you know, next month or next quarter. There's also the contribution of that meaningful act into a bigger story. And I think about that story as the quest to thrive together. That is really the infinite game here. Human societies would never have evolved if we didn't have certainly a capacity, but also the proclivity to care for each other, to really be interconnected in ways that create that sense of all of us, you know, being insiders and connected to each other, and also expecting that each of us will contribute. So belonging and civic muscle is an ancient, you know, sort of human evolutionary thing, really all life, not even just human, right? There is this like deep interdependence. And so when we think about the infinite game, it's really seeing that we can make moves toward thriving together. We can face adversity and challenge or threats that pull us away from it. And all of that is kind of runs through the questions of who feels that they belong and who feels that they're contributing to build the civic muscle that we rely on to do big things together. So I like to think about it in any given moment, in any slice in time, where are we in that story of an infinite quest to thrive together? And then within that, you know, where are we in that expectation of everybody feeling they belong, everybody contributing to the shared civic muscle that allows us to be a commonwealth? Some actions bring us closer to that, and they expand that circle a little bigger. They build that muscle a little stronger, and other actions actually tear at that sense of belonging. They erode civic muscle. So it can go up or down in either direction. That's how we can avoid sort of falling into a doom loop that everything's getting worse and it's terrible, or being overconfident that things are good, but they may not stay good for very long, right? So it allows me, I will say personally, but I've seen this in others, to maintain like ambition, high ambitions, but also a lot of humility. How can I be curious about better ways to thrive together? How can we do this work? And when you set it up against an infinite game, it really comes close to home. Like, where are we now? Where have we been? Where do we want to be? And what's my next action that's going to help be a step toward, a thriving future or not?
And I think it makes it not about any, we all have something to contribute, but we are not the reason that something succeeds or not succeeds, right? And so it does
Yes.
sort of help to level that playing field a little bit of we want to contribute to a better community and future for us all, but it does not stop when I stop or walk away from that, and it does not stop when the next person does, right? That it is this constant evolutionary thing that stays with us that we're striving for, whether we call it out or not.
Yeah, and there are some simple but often forgotten kind of hard-won lessons that a lot of this is building off of, right? That no matter how bad things are, how turbulent or violent or tyrannical things are, there's always the possibility of new action. There's new people being born. There's new, like we are plural people, and there's always newcomers. So there's reason for hope and optimism, even in really dark times. That comes from that next adjacent action. It couldn't call it healing, call it expressions of love, but there's no doubt that throughout history, we can make moves in any direction. We can navigate the course of our lives together. And that's a big part of this idea of being intentional about expanding belonging and civic muscle and using that commitment to become better stewards that move us, relentlessly toward a different future. So there's that piece of it. And then there's the idea that there's more to our lives together than just the, individual services and transactions we have. We're part of a commons. You can call it a commonwealth. And that commonwealth doesn't necessarily, like the things that people do to care for each other and to contribute don't often get valued. They're certainly not always rewarded monetarily, but their value in the quest to thrive together is infinitely, it's priceless. That's one of the reasons why there are stewards in every community. They're sort of unseen and uncelebrated, but they're doing really like priceless, infinitely valuable work because what they're contributing is part of that bigger story, the thing that we often lose sight of when we're focusing on just the things that we either win or lose around.
So I've been part of many conversations recently, including as a pool fellow in cohort 11, about social isolation and how it's such an issue in our community, and certainly was made worse by COVID. But how does the sense of belonging and civic muscle connect to that?
Yeah, so I kind of suggested that this is about navigating toward a place with higher and higher belonging, deeper and deeper civic muscle, or eroding it. So isolation is, you could call it the experience of many people feeling like they don't belong, and that we're not interconnected, which is like toxic to people and to communities, right? The sense of isolation, or even worse, systematic exclusion. The world isn't built for you. It's really built for other people. Their lives matter. Mine doesn't. The despair, right? We live in an era when there's been a lot of science around the deaths of despair, and isolation is one of those phenomenon that is, could lead to suicide or, addiction or, any number of other afflictions. But when they're coming from this deep sense of I don't feel like I belong, and I certainly don't feel like anybody values me for what I bring. That has cascading consequences for individuals and whole communities. So it does represent a sort of room for opportunity. If that's a kind of threat that's growing exponentially larger, then all of us who are looking for better ways to thrive together really have to take seriously not just the suicide itself or the alcoholism itself or the addiction itself, but the experience of feeling that, what, even one person seeing that I matter, even one person being open to what I have to contribute can start to be life-saving. It can be healing. It can be a path out of that crisis. And so we have to make, Sam, you said in the earlier episode, we have to make the practice of expanding belonging and civic muscle a norm. And the loneliness, the isolation that people are experiencing are telling us that this is not a norm at all. If anything, we have norms that are hurting us because creating this illusion of separateness or the illusion of injustice, I mean, not the illusion, but the experiences of injustice that ultimately, pull us away from a thriving future. So it's almost the exact opposite is really the work that communities like in Franklin Park and across Lehigh Valley and really, I can't stress this enough, thousands more across the country are actually every day finding new ways to counter that loneliness and exclusion and to create what I would call rising norms that are built around an ethos of thriving together and a commitment to belonging and civic muscle. So this becomes really high stakes work for in our time. If we're witnessing the signs of a future or a path that we none of us want to go down, then the way to get out of that is to start making baby steps in the exact opposite direction to connect even with one other person. And the minute that you form those connections, they start to become exponentially more powerful. Networks grow, organizations start building new norms. This becomes not just visible and valued, but investable. When we don't take our sense of belonging and civic muscle for granted, but we say it's really a fragile thing and we can either erode it or build it, and then start to say, we've never really crossed some of these strong dividing lines around color or class or national origin or language or, all of these lines on which we've divided us and them. If we start committing to belonging and civic muscle in ways that transcend those earlier divisions, we can actually bring immense amounts of creativity and capacity into this work. So the last thing I'll say on this is, you talked about like some of the things that trap us into the status quo is a belief that we don't have the resources to do all the things we want. We can't change big systems because that takes so much time and energy, and who's willing to invest it? That is a paralyzing perception if all we've got is, the assets that we've got today. But that's really an illusion, right? The illusion of separateness is really the source of that perception that all we've got is, a kind of finite amount of resources. When you see belonging and civic muscle as a resource, and our ability with even small, like unfunded ways of just treating each other differently, it starts to grow, and people's optimism starts to grow, and people's capability to take the next new challenge. Even one new partner, one new organizational connection can position us to do something we haven't done before. This is an asset that grows the more you use it, and it can grow super fast because it travels from individual, like practice, into organizations and then across networks. So when it starts to take hold, it can take hold in ways that are, surprisingly powerful. That's where the abundance comes from, that we have not been treating each other like we're truly connected, and that nobody should be left out. Nobody should be feeling isolated or alone. And anyway, so yeah, that's my answer. To find the optimism in that like alarm signal of loneliness and isolation, it points us to the path of deeper connection with each other and the need to invest in building belonging civic muscle as the escape route from all of these crises.
I think, what we hear often is technology has isolated us, or that COVID isolated us, and that definitely is true. And yet, Margaret, you and I have had so many conversations about like getting back to basics, right? In some ways, this is just getting back to the things that we know have worked over hundreds of years in terms of connecting with one another and being connected to a place. And so it sounds like belonging can come in lots of different ways. You can have a community online that you feel very connected to because you're connected around a shared hobby or a shared identity in some way. You can have a friend group. And the thing that we've sort of have been focusing on is that you can be connected to place, and that place, the space that you spend most of your time in day to day, can be a source of belonging and connection to one another. And even things like ICT that we've looked at and we are, investing in is really, it's not anything new. It's talking about everyday stressors as a parent, as we experience grief, as we experience loss of a job, as we experience wearing multiple hats at any given point in time, that we all have had those shared experiences. And if we can think about what's helped us in the times when we felt that and share that with others, it becomes a sense of strength for all of us, right? That we can build on that and grow it. And so none of these things are necessarily new concepts, really, even in some ways, right? It's things that have been part of our social fabric for a long time, but maybe we've gotten away from or we've forgotten, and that we can, like Bobby said, if you start looking for it, you'll see it. And how do we just continue to grow that over time?
Yeah, and be really sort of constantly stretching for those who don't feel it yet, right? Because
Yes.
it's easy to form,
Yes.
groups of belonging among people who feel like they look like each other, or they, travel in similar circles. So that's what the sociologists call bonding social capital. They're bonded together, but they're not necessarily bridging very far to across differences. This work of thriving together, the together part being, super important, is really about looking for those next new connections that haven't yet been made that reach people who aren't feeling like those are the people who are struggling and suffering. And so it's really the task of each of us to try to connect with those who aren't feeling that they belong or aren't valued for what they bring. And if that becomes the norm, that we're always looking to get that next new adjacent connection, that's how we can turn these systems that are sort of like they feel like they're going down a spiral of constant disconnection and injustice. That's how we can turn it into all of us having a stake in a thriving future and having a way to help build it.
So just Sam, can you just remind listeners when you use the acronym ICT what that stands for?
Sure, yeah. ICT is integrated community therapy, and we never say the full thing because it's not therapy. So it's ICT. But it is a model that was created out of Brazil, actually very much similar to what Bobby was sharing around just people offering things to people, the next person next to you, right? And how do we, in doing so, do we create that healing and that support for one another in our day-to-day lives, even if we don't know the person? And from that came this framework called ICT that's now used in over 30 countries, and that we are working with a group out of Pittsburgh that's bringing that to the US. But there's this sort of thread across all these things about sense of belonging and civic muscle, and what are the ways that we can invest in to intentionally do what Bobby said, stretch it for one more person, create one more space. You hear a lot about third spaces now, right? And where people are feeling connected to, or that they have a place for gathering, and that they can be. And so it is really about that, which I think kind of leads us to this next piece around. What does it look like in practice, Bobby? What would you leave people with to say, how can they think about growing belonging and civic muscle within their neighborhood, their space, their, whatever that geography might be?
Yeah. I got my first thing is to make sure that it is visible, that those people who are doing it are made a little bit more celebrated, right? Because it's never the case that it's not happening. Remember the analogy of this is an asset that can go everywhere from, everybody feels deeply disconnected and nobody believes we can do anything together versus, a more ideal state of everybody feels connected, everybody feels like they can chip in and do something great together. So we're always somewhere in the middle. And so taking stock of where you are and celebrating those people who are building this is like a good habit to look for those positive outliers and remember that in any arena within your own organization, in your own neighborhood, and an initiative that matters to you, there's always this bigger story of where are we in our quest to thrive together? Where are we in our efforts to expand belonging and civic muscle? Treating those like expectations. We want this to be the norm, but it's not the norm yet. So we want to credit those people who are helping get us there. And then we want to be honest about where we're falling short, because any of those shortcomings are the unfinished work for all of us, right? If even one kid doesn't feel like their life matters, that's a threat to everybody. And you don't need it to get to Parkland or, opioid addictions or suicide. Like that represents a lot of us as stewards being asleep at the wheel and not doing the work that we need to be doing to keep our communities connected and whole and thriving. So that's part one of this, is if any of this, these conversations are touching you and you want to get started, that those are good places to start. Look for people who you admire who are connecting and bring yourself and your talent, your creativity to work that you admire, or to find those opportunities where we're falling short and think about how can you as individually or organizationally, how can you form real relationships, trusting relationships with people who are not yet getting the signals or the resources that their lives matter. And it's like, I almost don't want to go further than that. Bring yourself to, stuff that's working, or try to identify those shortcomings and bring yourself and other people to the unfinished work of expanding, this really vital asset. There are fancier things like to learn from the stories of other people who are doing this in other places, and there's some hurdles in doing that because it doesn't always get advertised as belonging to Civic Muscle. There's connective tissue and there's community development and 95 other words that people use, civic renewal and democracy. And like, so if you start looking for the guidance on practices, you're going to find a huge array of conversations that are in the popular media or in scholarship, or it's just everywhere. So that, like, if you start getting curious about it, you're going to find no shortage of leads. But it comes down to, I think, ultimately two things: is do we see a future? Can people see a future? And do we believe that we can help navigate toward it? And those two things are really, really powerful, because those that do see a future and are helping to navigate, we can join with that work and we can bring assets and resources to it. And the flip side is also true. If we don't see a future and don't believe we can navigate to it, the issue is trying to find any way, be relentless about finding a way to connect and build that sense of, the future is really ours to build together. And that becomes healing and loving work.
And we're going to talk a lot more about that this year. But if listeners want to learn a little bit more about the well-being portfolio and additional thriving together resources before our next episode, where can they look for that information, Bobby?
Yeah, it's a good question. So obviously our organization is completely devoted to this idea, and so we have a number of resources on ripple.org. That's a number of resources at our website, Ripple, RIPPEL.org. There's also a huge array of resources that are free to everybody in the Community Commons. If you just go to communitycommons.org, and search for Belonging Civic Muscle, or any of the keywords that we've talked about today, you'll find a variety of assets that are freely available to everyone.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing all of that insight. There's a lot there, a lot more I want to talk about. So look forward to this conversation going in throughout 2026. Thank you for today's guest, Dr. Bobby Milstein, and again, my co-host, Samantha Schock, with the Leonard Parker Pool Institute for Health. You've been listening to the Well-Being Report on WDIY. And you can hear it again on our website or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been the Well-Being Report on WDIY. Thank you for listening. This episode and others are archived and available online at lppih.org and on wdiy.org, and also can be accessed on your favorite podcast streaming platform.